Off the Ball. GAA.
This was a game where, like, there's a 7-day turnaround for these All-Ireland Junior Intermediate Finals. It's so tight.
Oh, Tommy, there was bodies everywhere. Like a war zone. It was amazing.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the Ball Daily.
Good evening, you're welcome along to Thursday night's Off the Ball. It's Owen here with you until 10 o'clock this evening. Coming up tonight, we're going to have Brian O'Driscoll in studio with us from 7:30. The big news in the world of rugby today is that Scott Robertson is no longer the New Zealand head coach. He definitely has not been sacked, but he will not be seeing out the rest of his contract with the All Blacks, which was due to last until the end of the next World Cup. So we're going to get into that. Who's going to be the successor? What's next for Razor? And then also we'll talk a little bit about the Champions Cup as well. Obviously, Leinster and Munster both completing their pool stage action this weekend. In that hour, in the 8 to 9 hour, from around 8:20, we're going to get Kevin O'Brien of Bolton Glass and David Brady of Ballina into studio. They both won All-Ireland club titles. So we'll ask them what that was like to win those titles as relative underdogs at the outset of the year. And then from 9 o'clock, the football show with Dion Fanning is coming your way. Loads to discuss. There's been some pretty electric Roy Keane comments on the overlap this week. He's turned his gaze to Johnny Evans, who he's not the biggest fan of, it seems, and also Michael Carrick's wife, Lisa. There is a 12-year-old beef there between the pair, which we just rediscovered exists today. So loads to get stuck into there. Our number is 0879 180 180. If you want to drop us a WhatsApp message. Dion Fanning is in for the news round. Dion, how are you doing?
Good, Owen, how are you?
Very well. And Cameron Hill is here. Hello, Cameron.
Hello, Owen. Hello, Dion.
Hi, Cameron.
Cameron, you've got some good stuff for us here. But just before we set you up, because we were outside a moment ago and you were like, breaking news. Manager of future Ireland opponents have been saying things about the Republic of Ireland football team. So before we get there, let's just talk about the positives of last night. So we were on air talking about Troy Parrott last night. We were live in the radio when he got his hat-trick against Ajax. A brilliant night for the Irish striker. Let's first of all listen to some of Troy Parrott speaking to Dutch media after the game.
I think scoring a hat-trick is probably one of the best feelings as a striker. So yeah, to do it in the way that we won also is yeah, it's really special.
Yeah, the first goal, a real striker, poacher's goal.
Yeah, I feel like I needed that, to be fair. For me, they're the best ones. Just to be in the positions to score the goals is the most important thing for me.
Why did you think you needed it?
I think just to get going, you know. It's been, I scored against Fortuna, but there hasn't been many goals in the games before that. And obviously on Saturday I didn't score against Volendam as well. So, look, I'm always looking to score. So to get kind of an easy one is really nice.
Love that guy. Love that reporter.
Why did you think you needed it?
Give us answers, Troy. Did you see his goals last night?
I did, yeah.
Yeah, his second one was a tidy finish against Jarosz, who St. Pat's and Liverpool fans are familiar with. But most importantly, he's a Czech goalkeeper. Won't be anywhere near that team in March, but he is Czech.
Doesn't matter.
It's a positive visualization for Troy Parrott. Yes. He needs to be scoring against Czech goalkeepers from here on in.
But it's amazing that thing that, like, almost instantaneous, it's not like instantaneous, but that nostalgia I have already for, the Hungary game. And like, just when he starts talking about the hat trick, he's just kind of transported back to that day. And you're just kind of, I find myself listening to him just getting kind of blissed out again. You know, I can't even be knocked out of my bliss by the aggressive kind of, kind of questioning of somebody.
Interrogating the hat-trick.
Why do you need this? it's just an extraordinary thing that is, long it'll continue that we have that feeling whenever, Troy Parrott, it kind of speaks and talks about things.
It's so true, because we only ever hear him really in a Republic of Ireland setting, the last of which was the most extraordinary Republic of Ireland setting that we've had for quite some time. So I haven't really heard him speak in any setting outside of that since then. So to hear him speak, it does kind of bring you back. Interesting knock-on implications for Ajax fans, Cameron. You were kind of mentioning this earlier on.
Yeah, so Ajax will have to refund. They're going to refund their travelling fans after that game against AZ Alkmaar in the Dutch Cup last night. So 6-0 win for AZ Alkmaar at home to the Amsterdam club. It's their joint heaviest defeat in their history as a professional concern. I think there was a 6-0 against Feyenoord in 2024 that it equals. But Ajax, I think the Ajax manager and a couple of the players fronted up and said, look, the least we can do is compensate and reimburse the travelling support last night for that performance.
Okay. We also have, as I've alluded to, fresh quotes from the Czechia setup. What have they been saying?
Oh, he's come out fighting Owen. So Miroslav Kubak offering his assessment of Ireland's footballing style earlier today, I believe, ahead of that playoff in Prague. Of course, he was appointed back in December on a 2.5-year deal following the dismissal of Ivan Hašek. I watched all of Ireland's qualifying matches and now I'm halfway through watching Denmark's performances. We're analysing their defensive and offensive set pieces. There's a lot to take in, so it's crucial to figure out what might work against our opponents in terms of lineup and player type. We're facing tough opponents, but that's part of the playoff. The Irish are a team with heart. They play simple and straightforward football, and they're very aggressive and intense. The Danish are more football-oriented with an excellent attack. They may have some problems at the back, but I wouldn't want to specify that.
How are you feeling about this?
I'm feeling that this guy has spoken the God's honest truth.
Yeah.
You know, like it would be good to be able to pin it up on the dressing room wall and say, look at what he said about us lads. But like somebody would probably go like, hold on, that's kind of what we've been doing.
Yeah.
You know, is that not what we're trying to do? We're not really trying to play that much football. Yeah. It's almost the reverse of this, you know, Troy Parrott and thinking about hat tricks. Like the minute he said, I've watched all of Ireland's qualifiers, I'm like, the poor man, you know, like that's like a top, you know, you watch the Armenia game, you watch both Armenia games, like that's hard work for anybody. So I don't think, you know, look, we always get kind of a little bit resentful when people come out and say what we spend our entire time saying about the Irish team, that we don't have the players or we don't have. If anyone else says it, we're like, how dare you?
Yeah.
How dare you point out what we spend hours upon hours talking about?
Also, I'm going to be super petty here and say that it just stinks of complacency that he started to watch Denmark football matches. You should be postponing all of your research.
Or North Macedonia.
Or North Macedonia, indeed.
He hasn't even got to them.
He hasn't even got to them yet.
They weren't even mentioned.
You should be postponing all your research into that tiny 72-hour window between those two games. You should not be using the months and months of build-up into this fixture whatsoever. So on behalf of the Republic of Ireland, I take massive issue with what you're saying, Miroslav Kubek.
So that's what you'd pin up in the dressing room wall.
100%.
Yeah, simple, watching Denmark.
Simple and straightforward.
Yeah. Kubek and doesn't do one game at a time.
We've still 2 months before he uses the B word, right? Where he says they play a very British style football.
Like opening a tin of baked beans with your bare hands is hopefully what he arrives at. We do have some positive news though. Has Hamer been speaking?
No, but there is positive injury news ahead of that World Cup playoff in March. So Preston confirmed today that midfielder Robbie Brady's returned to training. He missed most of the season with a calf issue, I believe he picked up in pre-season. So that's a boost for Hagrumsson because he's already going to be down a key midfield option for that trip to Prague, because Josh Cullen is of course going to be out with that ACL injury he picked up over Christmas with Burnley.
That is a boost, because Robbie Brady, we kind of like equate everything at the end of this campaign to being super positive and things couldn't possibly get better, but Brady's absence was a massive one.
Yeah, no, it's good to have Robbie Brady back. It really is. It's you know, it's one of those things now that as it gets closer, you do start worrying about these things. Like Josh Cullen is actually, when you consider how he played in the games against Portugal and Hungary, like it is actually a huge loss that he's not there, because in his own kind of quiet way, he was one of those players who really, I think, just brought a lot in those games in a way that you can see. It's hard to see who fills that hole, and it's not Troy Parrott, it's not Evan Ferguson, it's not a big name, but they're the things. You can't have too many players falling by the wayside. So to have Robbie Brady back is important.
Yeah, in many ways, the Cullen injury is a bigger setback to Ireland than the Ferguson injury. Obviously, the Ferguson one is barely a week out, but if there were the same level of injury, you'd probably take Cullen, given you have more depth at striker than you do in midfield. It's just such a problem position, and Cullen nearly first name in the team sheet outside of Quevin Kelleher and Nathan Collins possibly. So that is obviously a massive loss. Let's move on to the rugby, Cameron, because big news coming out of New Zealand in the last 24 hours.
Yeah, the rugby world still reeling from that shock departure of Scott Robertson as head coach of the All Blacks. The former Crusaders boss confirmed his exit in a statement earlier today following growing speculation this week around his future in the New Zealand hot seat. Reports emerged in the New Zealand Herald yesterday that Test Centurion Artie Savia was one of a number of players unhappy with the current All Blacks structure. But New Zealand rugby chairman David Kirk briefed the media earlier and he dismissed resist any notions of a player revolt.
Definitely no revolt. I can be absolutely definitive. There is no revolt by the players at all. The players are very measured and very thoughtful in their responses. And, you know, there was two sides. There was always pros and there was always cons. And they presented a balanced picture of everything that was going on. And I also think it's very unfair to say that Artie somehow led something. Not at all. He expressed public opinions, but some of those opinions were not agreed to by other players. Some of them would have been somewhat aligned with them, all of the players are individuals, and they make their own decisions, and they analyse things in ways that they think are appropriate for them and for the team. So I think it's a real red herring to think of Artie as somehow having been influential in this decision. He absolutely was not.
So Scott Robertson has been on the statement, I presume it was, as opposed to speaking anywhere, but he was talking about how he took the time to look through this end of year review that was undertaken at the end of last year. And his conclusion was that he's taken the All Blacks as far as they can, that there should be a new kind of a voice coming in. So to suggest that he is sacked, which I see a lot of headlines out there saying that he's sacked.
How dare you?
This is completely on Robertson.
He took the feedback. I read that. He looked at the review and he took the feedback and said, that's it for me.
It doesn't look good in this report.
I don't come out of this well.
Who had the worst Christmas? Scott Robertson reading the reviews or Miroslav Kubak watching Ireland's qualifiers?
As you say, Cameron, the kind of idea of there being a player revolt has been quashed by David Kirk there, as we heard. But of course, we shouldn't need to hear from New Zealand Rugby because they have a no dickheads policy, and leading a revolt against a head coach would probably fall into that category.
These were just all a bizarrely similar set of isolated player reviews in which they all criticise Scott Robertson, it sounds like.
Yeah, it is a new departure for New Zealand, to be fair. They, as far as I'm aware, they haven't removed a coach in the middle of their contract. There was a lot of pressure on his predecessor, Ian Foster. He managed to ride out the storm, get to the World Cup final at the last World Cup, but Robertson obviously just not even off that level. And I think maybe getting hammered by South Africa last year was the real nail in the coffin.
I think so. I think Matt Williams was on Off the Ball Breakfast this morning and was talking about the way it's kind of transpired. It's not a million miles away from how Stephen Kenny ended up getting the boot in Ireland, because he was promoted from within, from a kind of Super Rugby franchise. There was a lot of talk, has he got the experience? Has he had international rugby pedigree yet? And that is a big factor in your success or failure thereof in international rugby, and whether you can compete at the New Zealand hot seat. And Matt Williams said, they're never happy. Even when they were winning World Cups, there was always some bitching and moaning between the various areas, and there's a New Zealand rugby culture, there's a North Island South Island divide depending on who's in the seat at any one time. So it feels particularly unfair, but I suppose if New Zealand are looking at the success of South Africa and how Razzie Erasmus was able to go in there with less than 2 years to go before the World Cup and turn it around and get them to back-to-back World Cup triumphs, I think it's probably the time to go. It's just a question of who you bring in at this point.
You have to feel sorry for him, though, really, when you talk about New Zealand rugby in that way, and, you know, it's never done this before, that this, you know, you get halfway through it and now they're making it out like, well, this is a natural break point. But from, you know, somebody who is, you know, come through that, you know, rugby culture, it's going to be, you know, it is when you read it and he says he's got it, you can imagine that it's very tough for anybody to be the kind of manager who's told, well, actually, We're gonna break with precedent here, and ask you to look at the reviews and come to your own conclusion.
Yeah, what are you seeing today, Cameron, in terms of likely successors? We'll talk to Brian after around 7:35 this hour, and I'm definitely of the opinion that Joe Schmidt should be in the radar for New Zealand, and I think this job should be on Joe Schmidt's radar because it just lines up perfectly for him when he exits the Wallabies this year. He's already been on the record that he kind of wants to get out of top level rugby, but he's also shown that he can dip the toe for a short period of time. This is a short period of time. This would be a 15 month gig to try and get them to the World Cup and try and do an Erasmus on it and try and win that World Cup next year.
Potentially, I think the head coach role for Joe Schmidt would just exhaust him after what's been an already exhausting time in charge of the Wallabies, and he's got them back up to pretty decent standard compared to where they were. Jamie Joseph, the head coach of the Highlanders, seems like he's the front runner right now. I've also seen Pat Lam potentially going from Bristol and maybe taking up the mantle. That'd be an amazing, amazing coup, I'd say, for New Zealand and also for Ireland or Connacht, considering, you know, we found this guy.
You claimed the All Blacks, yeah.
Finally, yeah. Do we get a transfer fee? Is that how it works? But him, Wayne Smith was mentioned by Matt Williams, the former Black Ferns coach who guided them to the 2021 Rugby World Cup, their own World Cup, and came in at very short notice when they were in a bit of rag order. So there's a couple of names out there. I've seen Raj and maybe Clayton McMillan also as like the very, very outside shouts. But I would say it's between Jamie Joseph and Joe Schmidt.
0879 180 180 is our number if you want to get in touch. Kieran has been in touch regarding Troy Parrott, and he said after a hat-trick for Parrott last night against good opposition, it's the Bundesliga next, I reckon. Great to see Irish lads looking outside of England. Jake O'Brien at Lyon before he got his new Everton home. Andrew Omavamadeli at Strasbourg, Evan Ferguson and Curry and Daba in Serie A. Hopefully this will give more Irish players the confidence to move to leagues in the Netherlands, Belgium, Austria, etc. If things go really well, the fame and fortune of the Premier League will come calling. Troy Parrott seems like a pretty happy man at the moment.
Yeah, and I think it's given him a great, not just a boost in confidence, but it's given him a great sort of power in terms of what he decides what he wants to do next. So, you know, he doesn't need to kind of I need to get back to England, I need to do this, I need to do that. And I think that was one of the things, even in the lead up to the Portugal and Hungary games, where he was asked about, you know, if this goes well or if this, you know, where do you see yourself? And I think one of the things that was so striking about him and is so striking about him at the moment is that sense of kind of serenity he has about what he's going to do. And he said, I don't think about things like that anymore. I don't, you know, and it's so interesting when it comes from somebody like Troy Parrott, who has spent his entire career was about where he was going to get to. And now he's actually just doing things, and where he's going to get to is kind of going to take care of itself.
We have loads more to get to on tonight's news round. We'll continue with somebody's rugby stories after the break. You're welcome back. John has been in touch to say Jamie Joseph is a nailed-on replacement at the All Blacks. All in the Game on YouTube says Razor to take over a Six Nations team after the World Cup. And then Patrick on Troy Parrott wonders if there's any chance that Parrott could fake an injury and get wrapped in cotton wool for 6 to 8 weeks. Just saying, I think we all hold the same concerns, Patrick. Cameron, where do you want to take us next?
Well, Erin King says she's hugely proud to be named Ireland captain for the 2026 Women's Six Nations. The 22-year-old made her international 15s debut in 2024, having made her debut on the 7th Circuit 3 years prior. That was the first of 7 caps under current head coach Scott Beaman. She returned from a long-term knee injury earlier this month, lining out for the Wolfhounds in the Celtic Challenge. She takes over from co-captains Edel McMahon and Sam Monaghan, and Ireland's first task is the toughest of tasks in their opening clash of the upcoming Six Nations, England at Twickenham on the 11th of April. Our own Susanna Mullen caught up with Eve Higgins, Bavin Parsons and Dorothy Wall this week as they launched their preparations with a 3-day training camp at the High Performance Centre out in Abbottstown. And Wall says the squad are looking forward to facing the reigning Six Nations and World Champions up first.
When we played England 2 years ago in 24, the occasion probably definitely got to us in Twickenham, and that learning in itself was invaluable for us going forward. So I could see the fact that we've played there, that like that was a really rough result. That was a rough enough day, but we have that in the bank. So this massive fixture in Twickenham is the second time we're doing it. So, you know, that gives me a lot of confidence, us a lot of confidence. You know, I also think post-World Cup, things are very different. They won the World Cup. I think this Irish team has gone away with the point to prove post-World Cup. So, you know, I don't know, I can't speak for them, but, you know, the feelings in camps might be different, etc. So, look, I think first game to get them might be the best game, actually.
Okay, let's move on to the golf then, Cameron. What's happening?
Rory McIlroy has a one-shot lead after the first round of his first tournament of 2026. Why did I go the long way there? Of the Dubai Invitational. The Masters champion carded 66 today and sits on 5 under par at Creek Resort. He's switched from blade to cavity back irons for the year while he's also using a new ball. And he explained after his opening round today the rationale behind its change.
If there's help to be had, I'll definitely take it. Yeah, I've been thinking about it for a while, and even in Dubai at the end of last year, I hit a couple of like 5 irons that I misstruck slightly, and you know, like instead of it maybe coming up you know, 5 or 7 yards short. It was coming up sort of more like 10 to 15 yards short. So, yeah, I just asked the guys at TaylorMade to build me up a set. And I went down to Australia with them, and with that firm turf down there, I felt like those irons were going through the turf better than the blades. And I've practiced with them at home since, and I've got a new golf ball in play this week as well, the new 2026 ball. So overall, I've liked what I've seen at home, and you know, today was a good test for it, and I felt like everything was pretty good.
It's a pretty big change, Dion. You're going to explain the difference between blade and cavity irons here for us.
Yeah, there's one moves through the air in a one you've got to hold on to much tighter than the other.
I can tell you that. So for a blade iron, what you have is a compact, solid club head where the weight is concentrated behind the hitting area. And then on the other side of things, the cavity back irons, they have that hollowed out rear design on the back of the club face, and then that redistributes the weight more evenly around the perimeter.
Okay, so it's like more forgiving.
It's like dairy milk, you know, the solid option, and then the one like the fruit and nut where it's got a bit in the middle. Okay. I like that.
That's good.
Right?
Yeah, exactly that.
Okay.
I think for any ordinary golfer, a blade is more difficult to use than a cavity. I'm open to correction on that. I'm sure keen golfers will get in touch. But it does, even to the untrained eye, seem as if this is a pretty big switch from a player of Rory McIlroy's standard, of any professional. So there's been a number of different changes that he's brought to his game in recent years. And this seems like another one. So it'll be interesting to see if his January optimism permeates right through the year. And there's no better man to be optimistic as he goes into a season than Rory McIlroy. And rightly so, as he's proven in 2025. What else have you got for us, Cameron?
Well, just to round off the scores from the Dubai Invitational today, Shane Lowry is 2 over after his opening round. He had 2 bogeys in his last 4 holes today at Creek Resort. Patrick Harrington is signed for a 1 over par round of 72, while Tom McKibben carded 74 for a 3 over par. Now,
sorry, just a very important text to get to here. John's been in touch to say, I listen every night from the south of Spain. Saved your number, but does it work? Love the show. Yes, John, it works. Good news for you.
Who this?
Yeah. sorry, Cameron, I did interrupt you there.
Oh, of course, no, it's fine. Ireland under-17s international Ade Solanke has signed for Premier League side Bournemouth today. He's making the move from their partner club Lorient after a year in France. Solanke was part of the Ireland team at the under-17s World Cup in Qatar last year. Liverpool defender Andy Robertson, meanwhile, says his future remains unclear with 5 months left on his contract at Anfield. He arrived at the club in 2017 and has won 2 Premier League titles, as well as a Champions League and an FA Cup. Robertson says he needs to see what his options are before making the best decision for his family. Some other transfer news today. Leeds have completed the signing of Facundo Buonanotte on loan from Brighton until the end of the season. The attacking midfielder's temporary spell at Chelsea was cut short so he could move to Elland Road. While here at home, Bohemians have been bolstered with the news that Paul Walters, goalkeeper from MLS outfit Cincinnati, is heading to Dalymount Park on a season-long loan.
What's your take on the Robertson situation? Like, it feels that at the start of the season it was guaranteed that he wasn't going to get a look in, and his influence kind of grew during that first quarter of the season. He's going to be 32 in March, and we know Liverpool's approach to older players, but it feels that the character he is will be useful around that dressing room for another year.
Yeah, especially as they're looking at another year of kind of some upheaval. But I think, you know, he's probably managed a little bit badly at the start of this season, in the sense that it was kind of obviously they were going to need him, and Kirkes didn't start well, and Robertson, you know, came back into the side and probably should have been starting the season, and with Kirkes kind of finding his feet a bit more. So it's going to be an interesting sort of like subplot at Liverpool, what happens with him. But I think there'll be bigger issues then, you know, in the summer than Andy Robertson. But if they were being sensible, they'd hang on to him.
What are the big issues that come to mind in the summer?
They'd be looking for a new manager.
Yeah, you're insistent on this. So yeah. It's did last Thursday night at the Emirates not re-inspire you? Did the win on Monday night not re-inspire you?
Not really, no. I think the without wanting to sound like the Czech manager, I thought the performance against Arsenal was the kind of thing that you'd see. Like, it was like low expectation, like when Ireland go to Portugal or something and hang on.
A lot of heart.
Yeah, a lot of heart, not a lot of football. And, you know, that they played a bit of football, but I don't think it was a particularly I wouldn't see it as much of a signpost for how the rest of the season is going
to
go.
And do you connect the Xabi Alonso news this week to that in any way?
Potentially.
Mm-hmm.
Potentially.
Is he your desired candidate to be Liverpool manager at the start of next season?
I don't know. He'd probably do a better job than Slot. I think it's something we're probably going to talk about later in terms of all the structures of clubs. But I think Liverpool are in the same situation where they've put a big bet on a structure that they felt could help them get transitioned from Jurgen Klopp. And it's, you know, they, for the first year, they were patting themselves on the back, and other people were patting them on the back about how well they'd managed succession. And it's not as easy as that. And it's not as easy as saying, right, we don't have a manager, we've got a head coach, and lots of people are going to do it. And I think they're one of a number of clubs that haven't really figured that out. And Alonso would actually at least allow them to have a manager who has some kind of a presence, even if he's still kind of in that modern kind of framework, but he would allow that at least.
Okay, there's going to be loads more on that on the football show after 9 o'clock. Dion, you're going to pop back into us. Thanks for popping in for the news round. Cameron Hill, thank you very much. So loads still to come in the next 90 minutes before we get to the football show. We're going to have Brian O'Driscoll in studio next, and we're also going to be talking Club GA in the 8 hour as well with Kevin O'Brien and David Brady. Back in a few.
Off the Ball Daily.